Thank you, Prem. Thank you, Sai Prakash. And dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilam, the most happening place on the planet. And today is October 23rd, 2014, and in exactly a month, November 23rd, we will be celebrating the 89th birthday of Bhagwan. And then immediately after that, we'll begin the preparations and celebrations for the grand 90th birthday of Bhagwan. And we in Radio Sai 2 are planning a series of programs, articles and videos. So it's going to be a year of immersing ourselves completely inside, growing in His love, glowing in His love and serving in His name. And not only suffusing ourselves fully with pure love, but also sharing that fragrance, that beauty, that purity with as many people we can. If more and more people are touched by that purity, by that pure love, the better and elevated their thoughts will be. And if more and more people have thoughts that are loftier and noble, we will see more and more noble deeds in this world. In fact, in some ways, many believe the golden age is already here, because you only have to have the eyes to look around. You see so many heartening events happening, so many unexplainable, beautiful, positive tidings. Today, we see a generation that is growing up fast. What with information available at their fingertips, almost at the speed of thought, knowledge today is not limited to the exclusive, limited few who have money, who have influence and intelligence. Knowledge today is within the reach of the son of a daily wage laborer with as much ease as it is accessible for the son of a billionaire. Knowledge today is in wholesale and it is free, regardless of age, gender, nationality, status, caste, class, whatever. And so, yes, we see the kids of today so aware of the world around them and its attractions, its temptations and its pitfalls, its usefulness as well as its demerits, its tremendous positive potential as well as its destructive capabilities. It's a generation which is amazingly self-aware, and they are aware in their teens itself, when they are in their teens. Because they have already seen and experienced enough of life to make those right and judicious choices in life. Today we come across students who, even before they are even 20, they are asking questions like, what is the purpose of my life? Why should I be doing this? What will I get out of it? What is all this rush for jobs and a good life leading me to? What do I want in life ultimately? What should I be doing so that I feel really fulfilled in life? Who am I? Why am I here? What should I be really doing? I mean, these are the kind of questions today you find even teenagers, people in their teens and in the early 20s asking. I have met so many such youngsters in the recent past. I was in Sri Lanka in March of this year, 2014, and after a satsang session, a student, he was probably in his 11th or 12th class or 12th grade, he came up to me and he asked me to explain what did I think of the spiritual inquiry that Ramana Maharshi advised his followers to do. He wanted to discuss the story of Janaka, where King Janaka, he asks, is this real or is that real? That's the famous story which reveals to Janaka that nothing is real in this world. Even this, what we call real world, is not different from a dream. These two changes, and this too is a creation of our mind, just like what happens in the dreams. So only thing that is same in both these states is the I. So this youngster, he wanted to discuss about this deep philosophy with me. I was frankly taken aback. Similarly, I remember speaking to two young sisters from South Africa who were here in Prashantinilam for Christmas in December 2013. And one of them, in her early 20s, she has begun working in a company, and she says her colleagues are always amazed with the coolness and calmness with which she does her work. Apparently, when she was in office one day, she received a call informing her that her car is stolen. And when she heard this, she didn't have any panic reaction. There was no agitation, there was no tension in her. It was You see, almost treated it like one of those things that happen in South Africa, and you know, it's okay. And she went about it in such a composed manner that all the other people working in her office, they were simply dazed. And then she was telling me this. I asked her, how was she able to do this? And she said, well, she knows. I mean, she lives with the feeling that Swami is in charge. So he's taking care. So there is nothing to worry. Whatever has to happen will happen and he will take care. She was confident that it will get sorted out and in the way that Swami wants. And as I talked to her more, I asked her, which is her favorite place in Prashantinilayam? What is that one thing in Prashantinilayam that she would not like to miss and would like to do it again and again during her every trip? I thought she would say the prayer sessions, the mandir sessions, the bhajan sessions. Do you know what she said? She told me her favorite place in Prashantinilayam is the meditation tree. That is where she spends a good amount of quality time every time she is here in this spiritual hamlet. And this is coming from someone who just barely crossed his teens. The other day I met a little girl who right from her childhood is so much in love with Bhagwan, with Swami. So much she misses Swami that her parents had to move lock, stock and barrel from Pune, and now they've settled down in Prashantinilayam. She's just 6 or 7 years old. But she listens attentively and with deep concentration every satsang session we have on Radio Sai. She listens to all the study circle sessions that happen in the double-decker building in the ashram every day. In fact, she's so tuned to Bhagwan's values that she stopped going to her school in Pune because she says the vibrations there are not good. She could not stand someone playing a movie song in that school. She loves to dress traditionally. She's born vegetarian. She loves writing poems and prayers on Swami, and she's adorably resplendent. To me, she is the harbinger of the golden age. Again, other day, I met another family, and their son, who is about 16 years old now, he and his father, they were here in April 2011 at the time of Bhagwan's Samadhi. And his father told me how he was inconsolably crying, missing Swami, sitting there April 24, 2011. And because Swami was someone he grew up with, someone who did not know how to lead a life without Bhagwan, someone who had seen Swami right from his childhood, and someone whom Swami had guided at every step of his life. Swami had protected him, taken care of every detail of his personal life, his professional life. And that day he was sitting in Sai Kurvanth Hall like an orphan. He was crying, totally lost. And even as he was so distraught, he noticed that his son sitting beside him, who was probably 11 or 12 years old then, he was very calm. He was very composed. And his son was simply staring at the samadhi and he was quietly praying. So he asked him, "Son, what are you praying?" And do you know what this 10-year-old said? He said, "Father, I am offering gratitude to the body which housed my Swami for so long. I am offering gratitude to the body which housed my Swami for so long." 10, 11 year old. This is what he says when his father is sitting there and crying for Bhagwan having left his body. This is the golden age we are living in now. And this father, I remember repeating so many times in that interview, he said, 86 years of pure love cannot be without any consequence. It cannot not bear fruit. It cannot go waste. And with time, I know we are going to see more and more fruits of this 86 years of pure love on earth. And that continues. Just a couple of days ago, we celebrated the Avatar Declaration Day. On Monday, that is And that morning in Sai Kulwant Hall, there was a beautiful offering of devotional songs by the devotees from the West Godavari district. I was sitting there, and it was such a soulful session. All those very beautifully written songs, they just sent me into a reverie. Let me share with you one of those songs, and then I will tell you what crossed my mind when I was listening to that beautiful program on the Avatar Declaration Day. So this was the last song of this West Godavari devotees music program on the morning of Avtar Declaration Day. And as this was going on, and I was sitting there, and this was the last song, as I told you, and they had so many very beautiful songs, very soulful, very meaningful songs on Bhagwan's avtarhood, on Bhagwan's life. And as I sat there and as I was reflecting on this little Satya, who, to the amazement of everyone concerned, in October 20th, 1940, declared that he has come to save the world, that ties with his earthly family cannot bind him any longer, and that this whole universe is his family, and that he has work to do, come to rescue millions and emancipate mankind. If you think about it, what stupendous declarations from a 14-year-old. I kept thinking to myself, and what occurred to me is how difficult it must have been for Swami then, because no one believed him. Constantly, again and again, everybody was asking him for proof. Even when he gave the darshan as Mahavishnu to some relatives, to some as Shirdi Sai, to some as Mahadeva, to some on his chest, he showed all the 10 avatars. Still no one was taking him seriously. Imagine if you are the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and everywhere you go, you are only treated not even like a class teacher, and people coming to you for silly things, you know, asking you flimsy questions, making laughable requests, doubting everything you do, not taking you seriously at all. And this never ends. Even after you have revealed to them in no uncertain terms who you really are, and you told them to make better use of you. I think it's the same with Swami. Swami always says how we go to the Kalpavriksha and the mega wish-fulfilling tree, and we ask for coffee powder, of all things. How frustrating this must have been, and Swami had to deal with it. Not for days and weeks, but for years and years, for decades. And he bore it all, because his love for us surpassed everything. And again, just think about it. If someone wants to change the world, will he choose to be born in a village that has no roads, no electricity, no school, no well, no education facility, no transport? Will he be born in a family that struggled to make both ends meet? And now, even if he's born in such a family or such a town, will he not wait for an opportunity and migrate to a town or city where there are at least his supporters, where there are facilities from where he can reach out to people? And that's exactly what Swami did not do. Isn't that supremely significant when we think about it? How the Lord chose this obscure, seemingly God-forsaken, arid land and converted it today to the most powerful land for all the lovers of the Divine. And how did He do it? What are the lessons in it for us? Well, that is why Baba says, "My life is my message." And this is what the youngsters of today should ruminate upon, and this is what students of Bhagwan have been sharing in different ways and in different platforms, speaking to youngsters in their own language, packaging Bhagwan's life and message in their own ways and in a manner that the youth can resonate with. The last two Thursdays we've been talking to a group of former students of Bhagwan's University and a young doctor from Bhagwan's General Hospital who had the chance to interact with over 1,000 college students in the district of North Kannada in Karnataka. And apart from making presentations in many schools and colleges, they also had this chance to answer and interact with them and discuss the issues and questions that the youth posed to them, the issues that the youth deal with in life today. And we now thought that the discussion that they had with the youth there, this is something probably we should share it with the world, and that's the reason why we had the last two Thursday sessions, and we were discussing about their interactions and their discussions with the youth there, and that is what we'll be doing even today. The last two Thursdays, we will continue today what we left off. So in this last segment of Thursday Live, coming to you from the straight from the studios of Radio SI, we are going to listen and continue the program, Inspired Hearts, Empowered Future.
to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside Inside Deep Inside. I'm Team Nodis as Vishu. The time in the studios now is 8:52 and inspired hearts, empowered future. That's what we are going to do now. We continue from where we left off, and with me our brothers KM Ganesh and Harishankar. Harishankar from the Central Trust, KM Ganesh from the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, and Dr. Prashant from the Sri Sathya Sai General Hospital. Welcome brothers. And so where do we begin?
From where we left off.
Yes, Hari. We took certain questions. You could summarize for our listeners, you know, where we left off last time.
Yeah. So where we left off last time was on the topic of distraction.
Yes.
So
basically, we were discussing the questions that the youth posed to you, right?
Yes. So over the course of the 3 days that we conducted the workshops, the several questions that were posed to us by the participants, and like as I said, there were so many of them that very few were actually dealt during the question answer sessions at the venue. So we had to come back and discuss these things and then mail it over back to the participants. So over the last 3 sessions including this session, we have been going over many of those questions.
And this workshop was in September, isn't it?
Yeah, this was in the September 15th, 16th and 17th, so last month. This was in the Uttar Kannada district Karnataka.
Yeah.
So we had workshops in 3 principal towns in that district. So we began with the district headquarters, Karwar, and then from there we proceeded to Honnavar and on to Sirsi on the last day. So over these 3 days, we had workshops in 2 education institutions a day. So that was like 6 workshops. And about 1,000 students participated over the 3 days. We had about 1,000 students who participated in these workshops.
Yeah, so last time, the first time I think we dealt with the question of how to develop self-confidence. I think that's what we did in
that
one session.
That was the first session. We took. And in the last session, we dwelt on the topic of concentration.
Yes.
So, listeners should remember that these were questions which came from students, and many of them...
I'm not able to concentrate while studying, I'm not able to
Yeah, these are
focus.
Questions that were relevant to their life. So, one of the things was, yes, we took on the topic of concentration. How do we achieve concentration?
Yes.
And the allied question of distraction.
I think that is where probably we thought we'll want to spend some more time.
Yes.
Right?
So the last time we looked at distraction in one particular fashion. We said that especially for students, distraction actually it belies another phenomenon which is going on in the background, which is stress relating from the activity that they're going to take up. And that stress again has something in its background called, some idea they have about that particular subject or that particular teacher who is teaching them. Because of that, before they take up the subject, say mathematics itself, they're stressed. They have some ideas about how difficult that particular topic is. So the moment they sit down to take up that particular topic, their brain has a coping mechanism, a defense mechanism, which tells that particular student, why don't you do something else?
Because it's stressful.
Yeah, to avoid that stress. So that's the way for the brain to diffuse the stress. It gives you some other, something else for you to relax. That's what happens for many of the students, especially at ages when they are teenagers or much later also. This is a phenomenon that does occur. So distraction arising out of a coping mechanism from the brain itself. That is one aspect of distraction that we took up the last time. And in this, so we said that distraction has another facet, which is what we thought that we will look into in this particular segment. So, what one of the things that is even brought up during the question answer sessions, and I'm very sure that all listeners will relate to this, is the fact that in our present age, there are simply so many, many ways to get distracted. In
Absolutely.
Our times, like we had maybe one channel on TV as students.
And I yeah. think there was, I think 10, 15 years ago, there was only one, on Sunday there was one movie. You know, people would wait for a movie, to see a movie only on Sundays. You had only one TV channel, Doordarshan. If I think about the 90s,
yeah.
I think there was only one channel,
yes.
DD, Doordarshan, and you know, there was a movie only on Sunday.
Yeah, there's hardly anything to sacrifice, really.
After normally award-winning movies.
Yeah, award-winning movies. So, you know, it is okay, fine, once a week you spend one hour or 2 hours, you know, in quote-unquote relaxing. But these days, the whole
the
scenario has changed so much.
So many, yeah. Ganesh.
Yeah. The main problem is, in theory, especially yes. with the youth, they'll be knowing what exactly is the problem. They are aware of the problem. They are aware of this habit we call procrastination, which is very common. It's not only in the youngsters, it is there in the grown-ups also. But they want something like an instant medicine or a solution for this problem. When, because for example, if they are getting distracted, even when I'm sure they're looking, they're listening to this particular, radio series, and, they may be reading a lot of, motivational books. What they're looking at is some instant solution, you know, something like a tablet which will solve the problem. But there's no such instant solution for this problem.
No shortcut.
No shortcut. Absolutely no shortcut. And let us accept it. Let us all accept it to begin with. But the good news is, I'm reminded of one particular Chinnakatha of Swami here. Mm-hmm. It's like there was a meeting of all the animals in the forest, and to just sum it up, all the animals felt that the man today is more having more of animal quality than any of the animals, because he's got a combination of so many animals inside him. Mm-hmm. Okay, so they all felt why a man should be given the apex in the human creation, in the creation of all the creatures. So that's when one sage is invited, and he's asked, like in a lot of ways, like the elephant is the strongest animal, and lion is very courageous. Why is it that man is given such a, you know, elevated position? And that's when one fact is really revealed, and that's precisely what Swami wanted to convey through the story, is that it is only in the human beings that we have this capacity to consciously put effort and bring a transformation in ourselves.
Mm, yes. Okay. And animals are so much hardwired.
Yeah, they are hardwired. They don't have an option. They don't have that particular talent which we have.
Yes.
So, having said that, The good news that I want to convey is, which Swami says, is through sincere, conscious efforts,
yes,
we can change ourselves.
Yes.
And that's really a very good news.
Yeah, in the sense that, you know, practically, as you're saying, one reason why a person cannot relax and say that I am done, you know, as he said, that I just swallowed a tablet. Like for the benefit of the listeners, even if you're listening to this program right now and you get some insights, believe me, like tomorrow you'll again be facing the same problem of how do I motivate myself, how do I get myself to concentrate, how to avoid distractions. It is something that is inevitable simply because it is there in our design itself. The way our human brains are designed, all these are phenomena that will come up again and again.
Yes.
But Swami says that each of us is endowed with this faculty of viveka, of discrimination. It is possible for human beings to put that effort and to rise above this animal level of being.
Yes. Yes.
So that is the good, as he said, put it, the good news.
And yeah, but so hurry to connect distraction and discrimination.
Yes. No, well, practically any such phenomena, I'm saying there's a common thread.
So I mean,
what I'm saying, our discussions.
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, what you're saying now, this is true for not only for distraction, this is true for anything in life.
Yes.
So all you're saying is, you know, yeah, there will be distractions, but you have to make that conscious effort to keep your focus.
Yeah. And
there is no shortcut to that.
There is no shortcut.
And
yes,
there will be times when you want to fall down flat on your face trying to avoid this, but it is always a matter of developing that skill. It is like creating the pathways.
But
later we'll be actually delving into this particular like, subject a little more.
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe as you mentioned, you know, we can start doing it in small steps. You can start doing it in little measures.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, for example, say a youngster who is spending a lot of time on social networking media. Mm. Say,
yes.
You know, and it happens, you know, it happens with youngsters that, you know, from night 10 o'clock onwards, they'll be on FB, they'll be on Facebook, and, you know, you're not able to sleep because, you know, somebody's constantly messaging and some conversation starts and, you know, it goes on and on and on. It becomes 12, 12:30, 1 o'clock.
These have a way of taking over your life entirely.
Yeah, they capture your life. So probably in some certain scenarios like that, you know, we'll have to say to ourselves, as you see, make that conscious decision, say, okay, fine. If I have to be on Facebook for whatever reason, I will say that I will give it only this much time.
Yes.
You know, per day or per week or per 2 days, maybe I'll give it only this much time to start with.
No, if you look at the schedule that Swami sets for students in the hostel, I think Ganesh he actually lives in the hostel and he can tell you in detail like how packed it is.
Yes.
For a student beginning from waking up to 5:30. Right up to
every minute 10 o'clock or 10:30,
that is the main point, that he is always involved in something that is productive.
Yes.
In fact, once one PG student complained saying that, sir, we are getting a study hours of 1 hour 45 minutes. It is not enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are some windows of time where we can actually study. So one of the senior actually advised him because he had passed out some 10, 15 years. He had been working. He said the schedule is so beautifully fixed that the moment you know that you've got 1 hour 45 minutes, automatically you learn to concentrate.
Absolutely.
Not only that, it's not about studying. Any activity that you do, whether it's during the sports meet or during cultural, we have put up dramas, we put orchestra programs, we know we have a limited window of time and in that we have to deliver. And you have no choice but to concentrate. So you're trained into concentration.
Yes.
You know, there are some CBSE exams, you know, I still remember, 10th class and 12th class, you get 10 days holidays, okay?
Yeah.
1 month, 4 or 5 papers, and 10 days, and it is a very common phenomena everywhere.
Correct.
Since you have 10 days, it is not that if 10 chapters are there, you'll study one chapter every day. What students eventually end up doing is, they study 5 chapters on the last day.
Last day.
Okay. So that's the natural
first
human.
First 2 days, you just take it very easy.
Yeah, okay. We are just warming up.
Exactly.
So that is the beauty. So one thing is, now, in an individual, he need not be staying in a hostel. He can chart out a schedule for himself.
Yes.
And stick to it.
Yes.
That brings a very beautiful sense of what we call a self-discipline.
Yes.
And once self-discipline, and you'll start enjoying it actually.
Yes.
It's not something forced upon.
Absolutely.
You know, you start enjoying it, then it becomes natural. Okay. But there is, as I said, a conscious self-effort that an individual has to put. To start with, let him chart down what he has to do throughout the day.
Yes.
Right from what time he has to wake up, what time he has to sleep, what time he has to have food, how much time he wants to spend in eating a food. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, it's a very common habit that you're eating food and you're watching a television also.
Yeah.
So what you can finish in 10-15 minutes, you end up spending 1 hour.
Yes.
That is a diffused way of living. I mean, if you are really, for a student especially, when the time is so, I would say, crunchy.
And you're not giving respect to the food that
you're not giving respect to. It has its own, that's a big topic in itself.
Topic.
No,
yeah.
I want to add, you know, Ganesh, in fact, when we joined as staff over here, I remember one of the first things, like Swami, when granting the interview, you know, before, prior to us actually taking up work, one of the things he told one of the elders sitting there, he said, "Veelaki baaga pani pettu." He said, "You give them enough work, they should be engaged the whole day." And Swami would inquire,
"Yes,
you know, what are you?" Swami had made it very clear to us that our work should start at 8 a.m. and end at 8 p.m.
Yes.
With the only breaks would be for lunch and then for mandir, you know, for
sessions.
Bhajan for half an hour. This is all he had permitted us. Otherwise, from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. we are supposed to be in the office and working.
Yes.
So, this here is actually a clue, you know, for each one of us how to live a life which is essentially meaningful, where you don't get...
Yeah.
See, one of the things all cultures teach is, as I said, an idle man's mind is a devil's workshop.
Yes.
And we all go through these periods, you know, where we let our hair down and we say, okay, today let's not do anything, let us, you know, while away the time. But very soon we get that feeling that is literally eating into our soul.
Yes.
You know, like, and while we think that is a way in which we give ourselves, you know, some happiness, what Swami says that essentially what you are doing is you are actually wasting time and not, you know, like in a sense you are demeaning your own self.
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, Swami used to say, change of work is rest.
Rest, exactly. Exactly.
He used to say, change of work is rest. For many of us, Saturday and Sunday is a time when we want to totally wind down.
Hmm.
But Swami would say, substitute something else. Maybe yes. you're not this particular, your work. Daily routine work, but take up something else. But always be in action.
Yes.
Because this has a way of, you know, like completely, it's a slippery slope into depression at times. You know,
yeah, yeah.
For people who are not engaged in some useful activity. And therein lies the entire clue that one must create a life of purpose for oneself.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is the whole idea. Not only should you not be wasting your time in activities like this, as you said, you know, social networking, all of them have their own place. But can you make your life intentional?
Yes.
Can you, as you know, one of the things that K.M. Ganesh did speak about in his in the workshop was goal setting. And the underlying thing in that is do set goals, you know. Yes. Do have a schedule for your entire day.
Yes.
I think, Hari, in this point,
yeah.
as far as the distortion of mind is concerned, I feel the conducive atmosphere is very important. So you can't just blame the child or student that he is not good, he is getting distorted.
Mm.
But distracted, what parents are doing, we have to observe. Mm. Normally, child will learn everything from observing. Absolutely. The whole environment is adulterated, and parents themselves, they smoke, they see television.
If they are spending their time, and if the TV is on, and if everybody else is watching in the house, very difficult. And if you have one or two rooms in the house, very difficult for you to concentrate.
And there's no point telling, go and study in your study room. I made a special study room. You close the door and study, and I am watching the television. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
Myself,
that doesn't work.
Having not followed, I can't say anything to my other child or somebody. So
even some parents justify saying that when I was a student, I used to study like this. Now it's the time for me to enjoy and let me watch television. You go and study. It doesn't work.
Because
children, they naturally imitate, not imitate, they just follow
observing.
Yes. You know, the eyes are always, they say.
Yeah, they say children don't do what you tell them. They do what you do.
What you do, exactly.
They unknowingly adopt these methods.
Absolutely.
Thinking that their parents are doing, so it has to be fine. Their teachers are doing.
Yeah.
So everywhere, the basic problem is lack of education based on human values.
Exactly. In that sense.
In fact, I remember reading up sometime an article. It says, these days, you know, we are talking about children being growing up. Children should grow up. But actually, they say that article said is parents should grow up.
That is why the Sai Parenting book worked out very
well. Everybody has to become more aware.
Yes.
I remember my father, he never switched on the television in our house because it was a principle for him that if I watch, I cannot ask my children not to watch. So the only time we watched television, I remember, was, you know, in those days, of course, there are not so many channels, but there was half an hour of news from 8:30 to 9, and 9 to 9:30 is one serial. So I remember all my school days, we watched only that 1 hour.
Hmm.
We would watch one serial every day, which is after dinner, and we would watch the news. That's it.
Yeah.
And that's the time, and father also would watch with us. That's it. He would not put it on any other time.
No, for Swami, actually, it was that I think he created the educational institutions in his name as a kind of oasis, you know, in this.
Yes.
It's a totally different form of education. And one thing, the advantage we have is that we have Swami as the model, a living model who walks, you know, exactly the message that he speaks about. It is there evident in his life. So, as he says, his life is his message. And we can see in Swami's life, a life of purpose.
Idealism. Yes.
And that discipline. I think that self-discipline.
Exactly.
The Himalayan
in
Swami's life.
And, you know, someone was actually remarking this. He said, if I look at Swami's life, it followed pretty much the same schedule for decades.
Decades.
Hmm.
Pretty much the same, you know, bhajans, the same rounds of interviews, no matter where he went.
Yes.
The schedule, with very few exceptions, was pretty much the same for almost 7 decades.
Yes, sir. I remember someone telling me, a teacher from the Vrindavan campus, that just for the fact that Bhagwan for 7 decades, I'm not sure, more than 60 years,
yes.
He came every morning for darshan. and every evening for darshan. Yes. Just for that fact alone, he is divine.
No holidays for him.
No holidays. Just for that fact alone makes him something absolutely otherworldly.
Yeah, and that is because of this, you know, he's totally, he always had this one thing, humanity's welfare, devotee's welfare.
Yeah.
This was always on his mind. You know? So which is why for him it was like, you know, from morning, early morning, they say he used to wake up at exactly 4:23, you know, physical body, they say exactly 4:23 a.m. he would be up. And right up to the night, he was always engaged in this.
Absolutely.
And as...
Can I ask a question on behalf of a 16-year-old boy or a girl?
Yeah.
At the age of 16, you know, I won't say that I am having such a strong motivation or an inspiration.
Exactly.
Okay. Still, I am trying to understand what life is all about. All that I am seeing and facing is right now I have to clear this examination to get a better career, or I have to launch into some... good degree. That is the only thing that I know.
Yes.
But I'm not getting motivated. I'm not getting inspired.
You're talking about the higher purpose.
Higher purpose.
That's a beautiful question, you know. At that stage in your life, your horizons are so very limited. You know, that is why this is, in our workshop, we dealt with something interesting. This might take a little bit of time to talk.
Yeah, please go on. Yeah.
See, in that particular workshop, in the very first session, we dealt with something very important called relationship with parents.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Swami repeatedly in his discourses, he kept on emphasizing this. Treat your mother and father as God. Especially, revere your mother as God. That is your first God. Okay. Way and above even like anyone else.
Yes.
So, I think that is in first of all recognition that as children we cannot see that far, you know, to really to comprehend that there is a very huge divine principle, etc. But revering God, I mean seeing God in your mother and father, that is what Swami would set as an ideal in front of us. Okay. Now, this is an experience I have had recently, you know, I am right now engaged in coaching a particular student who has a little bit of difficulty in mathematics. Now, I found that this, I cannot try to create a goal for him saying that, you know, I want you to study so that you become successful in your life. He doesn't understand that concept. Why? Because he is still literally in the lap of his parents. He is not able to see beyond that, you know, that he can't see himself as somebody who is working and has a family himself to support. That is not something he could do. And I found that the best way I can motivate this particular boy is to have him look at what his parents are doing for him. And whether out of love for his parents, whether he can, you know, work towards achieving very good marks in what he is studying today. So that is, you know, one thing that Swami used to continually emphasize because of this. In fact, we are wired to create success many times in our lives to make our own parents happy.
So you are saying the higher purpose in life here is just this.
Yes, because they can easily relate, you know, with their parents.
Just to make my mother happy.
In their world,
to make my father
in their world, it is something that will click immediately.
Immediately, yeah, they can relate to.
Look at what your parents are doing. Love them, and this is the best way to actually show that you love them.
Yeah.
That you can do something for them to just make them happy. For all
bring
the
smile on their face.
Yes, and I've seen like massive improvements in the way that student, you know, last summer what I taught him, and now he's in his winter break, he's come. It's a world of difference.
Wow.
Just because he started really getting, you know, present to the fact that when he has love for his mother, this is the way he can show it.
And this is something which is a gift for all human beings. When we are emotionally, they say human beings are emotional beings. When we are emotionally driven in particular direction, we don't have to put, you know, we don't have to write these and this. We don't have to break the goals into, you know, small subsets and all that and try to think, okay, next 1 hour I have to finish this, next 2 hours I have to finish this. Once you're emotionally driven to do something, to achieve something,
fantastic.
It'll naturally carry you, you know. So that we have to tap onto those potentials of being a human being. Okay.
You see, like many students, Bishu, you will be able to really, you have studied here from school itself. you would have probably seen students who, out of love for Swami,
absolutely,
whether they, you know, whether they loved the subject or not,
yes,
but the moment Swami said, go and study that subject, I want good marks from all of you, the way we used to, you know,
yes,
go out there, give it our very best, no matter how repulsive that subject
is. I remember once in the when I was in the Vrindavan campus, warden, Mr. Narasimurthy, he said that whoever gets the top 5 rankers in the coming midterm, mid-semester, you know, he said he is going to allow them to go front in Trai session.
Sit in front.
Sit in front in Trai session.
Wow.
Okay. And I remember logging out for that mid-semester.
What would
there
you not do?
Yeah, huge motivation.
What?
Yeah. And getting there. And I remember even, you know, the only motivation for me to get O grade every time was, you know, it didn't matter to me, you know, how great is a O grade. You know, O grade is like, you know, you get what, 75 or 70%. So it doesn't matter whether you are 90 or whether 80, right? All you need is an O grade. And I mean, I was very clear about why I needed O grade, because one Swami asked me, what grade have you got? And I said, O. And the kind of smile that I saw, that joy and the pride in his face, and I said, whatever it is, I have to get an O grade every time. Because next time, whenever he's going to ask me, if ever he asks me that question, I cannot say anything other than O.
O grade. Yeah.
In fact, I'm sorry.
No, I think for a child, before he comes to know about divinity and spirituality, anyway, naturally they will be exposed to their parents' love.
Yes.
So he should not forget only one thing. Whatever I do, it should bring respect to my
joy
parents.
To my parents.
Mm-hmm. See, that's what happened with me. I never did any wrong things in my childhood. Just only I should remember, I used to remember only one thing. Whatever I do, it should not
hurt my parents.
A problem for my parents.
Yes.
It should not it should not make them unhappy. This is only one fundamental thing I used to observe.
Wow.
One to first standard to seventh standard, I was studying in my, I was going from my home only. It was nearby small village school.
Hmm.
And I was good in studies, and my parents were very simple. And so there was no problem at all, either in study or in attitude or character, whatever it is. But once I was nicely beaten up for one thing from my mother. Mm. That was actually, to say it is so simple, I called my friend as monkey. In Kannada, I called Koti. See, just for that, my mother...
she was so...
See, the level I understood. So there is no question of talking any bad words. See, just I told monkey. See, that also should not.
Avoiding hurting your mother was that important. And one more thing, you know, like what happens is when you're talking about like ages like 16 or even 14 to 16, you see, that is a time when actually the children, they tend to exhibit some kind of rebellious behavior.
Mm.
And generally society, you know, when you see, for society, the word teenager and the word irresponsible or rebellious, they literally come up together.
Like almost synonymous.
Synonymous, you can't separate the two. But there's one person, you know, he narrated this. He had done a lot of research into parenting of especially teenagers. And he said the one thing that you have to remember about teenagers is, no matter what, you know, what kind of violent behavior they exhibit, I mean, violent in their household, no matter what kind of rebellious behavior they exhibit, there is one thing which lies deep down every teenager's heart that all adults should recognize, and that is that they love their parents intensely. What happens is at that time many parents, they don't get it, or they feel, you know, why is he behaving?
The rebelliousness comes if in some way they are not able to experience that parental...
Maybe.
It's so many things. It's like hormones are going on, the turmoil of literally being a person themselves.
They need more care at this time.
Yeah, but that's what. So what he said was, just remember one thing, like deep down, they love their parents intensely and they're not able to communicate that. They're just not able to communicate that, and all they want you to understand is that they still love you.
Yes.
And like if you can at that time, if you can stand by them, this is a relationship you have for life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Cemented. That's it. Forged once and for all. You know.
Yeah.
And that is what is a key. You know, if we want to create that kind of success in our children's lives, that is the key to have, to maintain that kind of relationship with them. That is all you need, you know. They will find success and happiness somewhere in their lives. And that is why Swami, all through the Bal Vikas programs, all his discourses, The one thing he keeps on telling all the students is, no matter what else you do, but keep respecting your parents, honor them, honor them, honor them. Remember, Bhishu, in one discourse Swami had said, every morning you should touch their feet, begin by touching their feet.
Absolutely. In fact, I used to do that because when we went for Balvikas, that was what our Balvikas guru mandated it for us.
Yes.
And so, as long as, you know, before joining the hostel, that became a routine.
Yes.
That's a great culture.
And the culture is instituted for a purpose. There's a lot of wisdom, there's a lot of psychology that is underlying that practice.
And I feel so happy, even, you know, there are, in so many Sai devotees' homes, you see that happen. I had gone to a devotee's house in Bangalore, and I saw the little one, 4-year-old. As soon as he gets up in the morning, he will first go and prostrate in front of Bhagwan's photograph. Then he will do it to his mom, then he will do it to his dad.
Wow.
Yes.
For a child, it may be very mechanical at that time, but eventually he will understand the values.
He will understand the values.
One day definitely he'll be...
At that age, if it is wired into one's head...
Consciousness.
And
yes.
Even if you may not understand it, but that attitude is there, unconsciously it is preserved.
Yes.
Yes.
Wow, I mean, we started with how to manage distractions and...
So it is very, you know, it came up because Ganesh has that question.
Yes.
That for an adult, for an adult listener right now, he can totally get that I need to create a purpose.
And, but you are saying the biggest purpose in life can be that show your love to your parents.
And essentially show your love, and especially for a teenager. See, his question was very relevant. At that age, I cannot relate, you know. You can talk to me about very high purposes like earlier.
Exactly. I was thinking about the same thing. Because I think even by the time people are in their 20s, they're still looking for what is the purpose of my life. You know, they're still trying to answer that question. Yeah. What is it that I really want to do in life?
Yes. It is a rare teenager who can really see beyond that and look at the very large picture.
Yeah.
But we need to address their concern. Yeah.
Yes, I think.
Yeah. And for many, you know, when it comes, as you grow up, we should still remember this ideal. It's not that only youngsters who are given to distraction, you and I are, even people who are elder to us are, but it is very important to create a purpose.
Yes.
Just like for Swami, he created a purpose, in our human terms.
Yes.
If you look at the hospital, he said, I will bring healthcare to the poorest of the poor. That is a purpose worth living for.
Yes.
Education, value-based education for all who come to me totally free of charge. You know, and just imagine his life, you know, like what a, there's no room for any getting down to any distraction.
You talked about showing love for the mother. I mean, that is what Bhagwan's life is all about.
Exactly.
I mean, everything starts from there.
Yeah.
Everything starts from there, be it the very fact that decided to stay in Prashantinilam to all the missions.
Yes.
And as I was reflecting also on what you're saying, here you see the immense profundity of Indian culture, isn't it? In terms of the bonding between the child and the parent being always so strong all through. I mean, you're always a child for the mother in Indian culture, at least.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in certain other cultures, especially in the West, you know, by the time the kid is 15, 16, or, you know, you feel it, it's time to, you know, fly out of the, under the wings of your parents.
Independent.
Yeah, that's... quote unquote, you know, you start earning, you start having a side job, and you know,
so
then you feel that I don't have to be dependent on the parents. So
exactly. So there, that is a very important part of the culture there, that they are taught to be independent from a very young age. It's a very beautiful system.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, it should be emphasized that no matter what the distance, see, you could be staying at home and not having a relationship with your parents. And a relationship with parents is definitely not a function of like what distance you are from them. You could be living on the opposite side of a continent, but all it takes is for you to be in touch with them as often as you can. Maintain that relationship. In the work,
you don't have to wait for a Mother's Day or a Father's Day. In fact, we say in our country, every day is a Mother's Day, every day is Father's Day.
Absolutely.
Yeah, have them, they too, you know, no parent will want to keep their child continually in the same nest in which they were born.
Yes.
Right? They want them to find their own feet, and it is a very important practice.
Yes.
But it also should be emphasized that they are an integral part of your life.
Yes.
Don't ever write them off for whatever reason.
Yes. And I always tell that, you know, our biggest well-wishers are our parents, and after God, I mean, who knows, definitely, I mean, who's all the time waiting to do what is good for us.
Mm.
But at the physical level, the biggest well-wishers are our parents.
Parents.
That's very easily we can understand in simple way what exactly love is.
That's the best.
The love of the mother for her child, it is definitely selfless.
Selfless, yes.
In fact, you know, one person, he told me this very powerful analogy and at the same time little disturbing. He says, your parents are like pretty much like a source of power, you know. You're like, and if you cut off from your parents, it is like you have removed your plug from the power socket. And it's like the fan. The fan, you might, for the all intents and purposes, looks like the fan is still rotating. Your life is still going on. But at some point of time, that fan is going to halt.
Yes.
You know, just for, that is something very, very, it shows, you know, you have to be always connected back to those, to your source called parents. Very, very important.
In fact, in one of the discourses, I was surprised to read that Swami mentions that when Abhimanyu was going for the war, he came back to collect the weapons, his mother actually stopped him. Then because he disobeyed his mother, he went ahead. In the big scheme of things, we can always justify and all that stuff. But Swami was explaining, Swami knows, obviously Swami knows everything. So Swami told, because he disobeyed his mother, because mother's anugraham was not there, ashirvadam, he had to die.
Same thing with Duryodhana, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mother
told him to,
to come to him.
Just as he was a newborn baby, in the same way he should come. But he disobeyed. again, the one who played trick was Krishna only.
It's a different thing.
Thing is, eventually the lesson that gets driven very strongly is follow your mother's command, make her happy.
Yes.
And automatically the big bonus you're getting is God's grace automatically comes to you, rushing to you. And other side is if you hurt your mother, you may get all the success. Apparently, if he withdraws naturally.
Yes.
And then you're gone.
Ganesh Swami would say this, you know, that even to students who are there near him, he would say this, if you cannot appreciate your mother's love, how can you appreciate God's love? How can you appreciate my love?
Thousand mother's love.
Able to understand.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And I remember, Bishu, this is very important, you know, there's one discourse, okay, where this was actually soon after my mother passed away, and Swami was giving a discourse in Kulwant Hall, and again, he was talking about having this relationship with parents and all that. And suddenly, in my mind, you know, I had this query, now my mother is not with me anymore. Like, how is it that I can have a relationship with her? Almost, you know, an answer to that, in that discourse, this was during the Atirudra Mahayagnam, I remember, Swami started talking about, even if your mother is not with you physically, she is not there anymore, don't forget that she is still thinking about you, she is still looking after you.
Wow.
Her, you are always in her mind, she is still thinking about your welfare. So it is your duty to always keep her in mind, always have gratitude to your mother for what she has done for you. And that is how you maintain that relationship. You know, even if your parents are not with you physically, this is the way in which you keep that connection still with them.
This is to begin with, all these things are necessary. Later, I feel later in life, for example, unless we practice righteousness, we may not be even, for example, a thief. Thief will have definitely a mother. She will bless, but thief may not be successful. Or so whatever mother blesses, if that would have been successful, then no bad guy would be present.
Yeah. In fact, Swami gives like an example of how eventually the human values are your like father, mother. Swami says your truth is your father, love is your mother, shanti, peace is your sister. So in the long run, these qualities are the one which you have to, they are your permanent family. But to begin with, you should start appreciating the gift, your parents. You know,
at the human level, that is one of the very important
qualities. All these things.
So I hope all the 16 years and all the youngsters listening, it's very clear to them, they better start obeying, listening to their mother, not shouting back at or arguing, which is very common phenomena. If they want good marks, if they want good marks and if they want to be really successful in life, they need mother's blessings.
Absolutely. And I think as Hari was saying, that there has been no occasion where Bhagwan has spoken to students and he has not mentioned about cultivating this love for the mother, love for parents. And I personally believe that there is no person on earth who has loved his or her mother intensely and has not found fulfillment in his or her life.
Very, very important point.
In fact, there was one study done recently.
So we mentioned about that.
Anyway, I think it's worth repeating. See, what we were talking about was the study which was conducted by Harvard. So the Harvard Grant study, it is a study that extended over 75 years. And they tracked the lives of a set of people over those 75 years. they looked at various factors in their life and they were looking for what is it that contributes to a person's a combination of success and happiness, what you call as fulfillment. They're feeling fulfilled. They are successful and they're also happy. They're content. Right? And they, among the all those different factors, they found the one that weighs utmost is your relationship with your parents, and among them your the relationship with your mother. In fact, they give the numbers that they found that typically, like if you are the people who have a strong relationship with their mothers, they earn like $141,000 more annually. Yeah,
they get better this paychecks.
I mean, if you want to quantify it.
We cannot quantify a mother's love, but this is a so-called, I mean, definitely it's a scientific study which is...
A scientific study which, I wouldn't say like, you don't say established because it's something that all cultures have always taught. But it is a pointer towards the importance of why they were talking about it across all the millennia.
So to the youngsters, it is not just we are trying to morally incline you, you know, to love your mother. It has been, it's a fact of life.
It's a fact of life. And at the same time, I think there is no one who has sort of disrespected his parents and probably become successful, but I won't say they had fulfillment in life.
Yeah, there'll be something gnawing at the heart.
There'll be something missing. Deep inside there will be pain. At least one day they are going to be parents, so they will understand. Same thing will, with a lot of interest, they will get it back.
Whether they are interested or not.
In fact, there was that one person I remember, he made this remark, you know, for he had some falling out with his parents for some reason. And he decided they're all that I'd never want to be with them, that I'll never talk to them for 20 years. He decided that he would have a great life independent of his parents. But he said, you know, looking back, all he can say about those 20 years were, those 20 years was life spent without my parents. That's all he could say. The adjective great had completely disappeared from his vocabulary. All he recalled was these were 20 years that I did not spend with my parents. He started out by saying that I'll have a great life. But he said that this was what was missing. He had 20, he lost those 20 precious years with his parents.
Even as you speak and mention this, I remember of so many students whom I have had the chance to interact with during this series, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. And you know, I remember occasions when suddenly some students had to leave the university for some strange reason. I remember Vivek Naidu, you know, he had to go home after his graduation. He did not get his MBA. And you know, he had to do it after a year gap. And that is the year where his parents needed him the most. And he spent, you know, today he is very thankful to Swami for the way, for designing his life in such a way that, you know, at that moment he felt very sad that, you know, he lost a year. But today when he looks back, you know, that was the most fruitful year of his life, because after that his parents did not stay on for longer. And he spent that quality time with their parents. And I think, you know, as you mentioned this, I'm reminded of so many instances like that where Bhagwan has ensured that, you know, you spend that time with parents. Whenever it's really absolutely needed. Because that is what is going to be bolster your life.
Absolutely.
Like one student actually related this, you know, even when it comes to the path of spirituality also, I think it is very important. Once Swami brought this point up in Kodaikanal, he was telling the students, you know, what is it that you think brought you so close to me? Do you think it is your looks, or is it that you have any special talents? Or you think you have done like an enormous amount of great deeds in your past lives that gives you this wonderful fortune of being with me in Kodaikanal. Swami said, none of that. If you are thinking that you have done great deeds and lot of karma you have accumulated, that karma got burnt up that first moment when you had your darshan.
First darshan.
Very first darshan, that got burnt up. So they were all wondering, so what is it? And Swami said, just one thing, the prayers of your parents. It is because of the prayers of your parents that I have brought you this close to me. So you should understand that even on the path of spirituality, even a saint like Shankaracharya,
absolutely,
he lived a monastic life where it is said that you cut off all ties. But he made it very clear that there is one thing above all that is a duty to one's mother. He took the permission of his mother made her completely clear that this is what he was born for, and therefore she should not grieve. He made sure she does not grieve.
Yes.
And also gave her the promise that in her last moments, dying moments, he will be there to even, perform her rites.
Be with her, yes. Yes. Yeah.
So it is very, very important. Even people may think, you know, I want to be on the spiritual path and therefore cut off all the ties. You should not be attached, but at the same time, you should not give them pain also.
Absolutely.
They should be, in their hearts, it should be settled that yes. we know what our children are up to.
Yes. I mean, two things come to me very strongly that we saw in Bhagwan's life. And I think, and I used to always feel that, you know, he did it only to teach us.
Yes.
You know, the way Bhagwan used to cut short his Kodaikanal visits and be here for Prashant in the last few years, every Ishwaramante Swami used to come off, and you know, even though it was the month of May and it was very hot, he used to return to Prashantinilayam and for the Ishwaramande, May 6th.
Yes.
And you go to the Samadhi and you know, we had this function in the Samadhi, and I remember one occasion when he called all the Burakatha boys and he wanted them to sing those songs on Mother Ishwarama inside the Samadhi, and you know, he used to see that love from Swami's face oozing out when the mention was made of Mother Ishwarama.
So the instant passport to Bhagavan is make your mother happy, you know. Yeah. Immediately mother, Swami will be, yeah. Saima will be happy. Yeah.
But also as we were talking about the topic, like the topic of distraction, how to, we're not, in fact, if you notice, Bishu, we have totally gone beyond distraction now to Swami's ideal of living a life of purpose.
Yes.
And Swami makes it very eminently clear, you know, there is one discourse that Swami has given way back in 1959. And somewhere, you know, I was reading through Swami's discourse and those words literally jumped out of the page to me, you know, that it shows why Swami put so much emphasis on creating an educational system, a university system, where he spent so much time with the students. And where the students, you know, like even students today, they breathe Swami's presence in and out. They breathe his message in and out. And there's a reason for that. Like, what is driving Swami, you know, that what moved Swami was...
Inspiration.
Yeah, this one thing, allow me to read out. It's a very important passage. 1969, let me correct that. I said 1959, it is 1969. And Swami says, the age span of 16 to 30 years is crucial. For that is the period, as Swami says, when life adds sweetness to itself, when talents, skills and attitudes are accumulated, sublimated and sanctified.
Wow.
Now, he gives a very beautiful, you know, something that we can all use it in our lives. He says, if the tonic of unselfish seva, unselfish service is administered to the mind during this period, life's mission is fulfilled.
Beautiful.
Wonderful.
Wow. If you have learned what is the service, if you have tasted the joy of selfless service.
Yes, he says at this is the point in time when the mind should be given this tonic called selfless seva. And you can see, I across India, so in the Sathya Sai Seva organizations, we have the youth wings, or we have people always engaged in this
They've all, and it has happened because early in their life they have tasted that joy.
And that fulfillment, Swami is very clearly indicating that this life of seva, this life of service, just as what he led in his life, that is exactly the tonic which we need to feel that fulfillment.
Wow. Fantastic.
So, yeah, this literally jumped out of the pages, Bishu. I'll never forget that.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Hari, for, you know, bringing that to all, notice of all our listeners. Yeah. And you must have seen in the North Canada districts, in all the three places that you visited, also because you also interacted with the Sai devotees in the Sai center, you must have seen so many inspired Sai youth.
Oh, there was like tremendous...
District president was telling one day,
If
I just call night one guy and tell tomorrow bring some youth, 500 to 600 youth can come just by next day morning.
Wow.
See, that is how he is.
In fact, in some ways we saw that happen during their Parthi Yatra, isn't it?
These people, in fact I was present on the very last day when all, you know, the activities are all done, the drama had been done, the bhajans were performed in... the Kulwant Hall, and I was just looking at them, you know, if I were in their place, I was just feeling like how tired I would be, you know, looking forward to going back home. These people are all, you know, they still had so many tasks to be completed. It's just boundless energy. Even Ganesh, you remember when we went for the workshop, we had done all the preparation here. We had done like several rehearsals and, you know, the workshop, the entire presentation, we had fine-tuned it to the extent possible. And when we went over there, we were prepared. Now what happens is there is the background work, the support group who are there in Karwar, Sirsi and Honavar. We were astounded at the energy of especially the youth who were there. There were people who were working till 2 a.m. You know, they had to take printouts and so many things that they were doing, ensuring this is a beautiful thing that they did. So normally when workshops are conducted anywhere, a fee is paid, you know, to all the people, the resource persons, the organization that conducts the workshop. This, in fact, was mentioned in one of the colleges. That person said, like, can you imagine the amount of love that is underlying these people when they do not ask even for a small amount of remuneration? Not only that.
In the outside colleges, when these workshops.
Yes, in the colleges where you performed, one of the principals mentioned this. Not only that, the Seva organization, they organized free lunch for all the participants.
Wow.
That, what I think more than anything else, they absorbed that love, you know.
Yes.
That is primarily, you know, I don't know whether whatever we said to what extent it really went into their minds, but I think the one thing they would have certainly absorbed is the love. And that love is not, you know, the human love. It was just, we had the opportunity of channeling Swami's love, what he had given us, straight into their hearts. That was the opportunity.
And the youth doing this work, because they are inspired by selfless service.
Exactly.
And one security person, he told, the crowd was very disciplined. Morning, 4 o'clock, they used to get up and come for Nagar Sankirtan. That day, actually, I saw the tail end. The crowd was so much. And went up to the Rama Sita statue.
Oh, my God.
Almost near South Indian canteen, ladies' side.
Almost half of the Nagar Sankirtan route is filled with people.
2,600 devotees.
2,600 devotees. Fantastic. It was a glorious Pratiyatra.
Yes,
I think that we saw ashram totally full, you know, everywhere you see the only long queues, almost like some big festival in Prashantinagar.
And given that it was the very first time that they had come as a group and that they had presented a program, the students did a tremendous
job. In fact, the program, which consisted of a bouquet of dances, was amazing. What touched me really to share with you is the interest with which they did every tiniest detail. You know, the dances were definitely good, the songs were good and all that, but you know, every dance they wanted to beautify it. You know, the costumes for each dance was different and etc. You know, then you had the gods coming in, each dance was dedicated to one deity, so that they had the gods coming in and all that. But I'll tell you, I noticed one thing, and that really touched me. You know, there were these stage boys, you know, who would come and place different things on the floor for the dancers to pick up as they dance. And, you know, they would put down some sticks or some bells, etc. And I saw when some volunteers came, you know, in a tray, they had the sticks which they placed down. The sticks were all covered in, you know, golden, wrapped in golden foil and all that. So, that is obviously understandable. That is what is needed to make the dance colorful. But, you know, even that tray with which they brought, that was also covered with silver
foil.
Now, this is again a very important thing for the youngsters.
Yeah.
The attention to the tiniest of details is what makes you, it's not the big things that you have to do.
That's to me, that was very touching. See, when Bhagwan was physically there, I have seen that happen, you know.
Yes.
Because you want that anything that falls on Bhagwan's eyes should be nice.
Nice.
Should look very presentable.
Yeah.
So we ensure that. I think everybody ensured that. But when Bhagwan is physically not there, at times, you know, there is that attitude that it's okay, you know, only the dancer needs to hold this, you know. So that can be colored. I mean, I'm just taking this tray, I'll just keep it and come, you know. That may not be really covered in gold and... But I didn't see that attitude in this group, you know. I saw that seriousness in every little thing they did. That was really very touching for me.
And you brought up that point there, that what I experienced in my time over there was a very strong connection to Swami. I think in the very first interaction when we spoke about the Karwar trip, Dr. Prashant, he brought this up. He said when we went over there, it was like we stepped out of Prashantinilayam back into Prashantinilayam. And Swami had visited that area back in 1968. but it still feels like, still feels, you know, like he is present there. That same kind of energy, enthusiasm, fervor, wow, that is seen.
Wow.
And I think it is very important for every devotee to be, to continue to maintain, you know, that kind of strong connection to Swami.
Swami. Absolutely.
That is all we
fantastic. Yeah. It was a glorious week in Prashanti, and I'm tempted to actually play one of those songs, you know, to which this Balika students of North Canada danced, and probably we'll end the session with one of those vibrant songs. All of us can picture us and relive that dance and relive that love and devotion surging in their hearts.
Absolutely.
श्री राम राम रामेति रमे रामे मनोरमे सहस्र नाम तत्तुल्यम राम नाम वरानने The efficacy of chanting the name of Lord Rama with utmost sincerity surpasses the spiritual merit of chanting even the 1,000 names of Lord Vishnu. Lord Rama is extolled as embodiment of dharma. Ramo vigrahavan dharmaha. In beauty, he is verily an embodiment of grace. No wonder it is said, Ramayati iti Ramaha. The one who delights is Rama. Let us all celebrate the glory of Dharma Murti Kaushalya Nandana Sri Ramachandra Prabhu.
ఎదురింకా లేదంట మా జన్మ మా ముత్యాల పంట ఈ సారి ప్రేమంట. నేనే ఆ దేవతలే నాట్యం చేసేలా సాయి రాజ్యంబురాజిల్లేనయ్యా, పాడే ప్రతి మనసంతా పరవశమయ్యేలా సాయి రామంబుసేనయ్యా. బహు ఆదుకోరామయ్య పలికే దైవం నీవేనయ్య, నీ ప్రేమ నీయవయ్యా. మము ఏలుకోరామయ్య లౌకిక మాయాయ్యా, మము ఆదుకోరామయ్య పలికే దైవం నీవేనయ్య, నీ ప్రేమ నీయవయ్యా. మము ఏలుకోరామయ్య లౌకిక మాయాయ్య, నీర చాలున్నయ్యా. మము ఆదుకోరామయ్య పలికే దైవం నీవేనయ్య, నీ ప్రేమ నీయవయ్యా. మము ఏలుకోరామయ్య లౌకిక మాయాయ్య, నీర చాలున్నయ్యా.
So that was one of the songs from the program staged by the Balvika students of Uttar Kannada district, North Kannada district of the state of Karnataka. Until now you were listening to the discussion where brothers Harishankar and K.M. Ganesh and Dr. Prashant were sharing about the interaction that they had with students, the questions that they dealt with interacting with the youth there when they were in this district of Karnataka. And the last few sessions we have been taking some of the questions that the youth raised and discussing the issues that concern them and how we can tackle them in the light of Bhagwan's teachings. And we will continue this. We are not yet done. There are so many questions that they received, and I personally believe that this is something very useful and this is something we need to share. And we will definitely continue this discussion in the future sessions. Thank you so much, dear listeners, for being with us. And on this glorious, beautiful, happy day of Diwali, once again, greetings from all of us at Radio Sai. Have a light, bright, enlightening, delighting Diwali celebrations. And please ensure that the light of love that lights up in your heart when you chant the name of Sai, when you think about him, that lights up the hearts of many others. Because only when one light touches another lamp, then slowly we would see a series of lamps, and that is when the whole world one day would become alight with his love. So thank you so much for being with us all through the day. And if you have any queries or comments, please feel free to write to us. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. And Team Radio Sai wish you, and on behalf of all of us, a sweet goodbye and loving Sai Ram from Prashant Nilayam. Thank you so much.